that's right. We're right here, Sharp Facets Gallery, 4:07 in the afternoon. And who do I have sitting across from me today? Dr. Ray Wilson, who is the Executive Director of the Western Piedmont Education Consortium. You might say, what the heck is that? Dr. Ray Wilson, how you doing today?
I'm doing just great, Ann. And you?
Very good, very good. Now, what is, for those that don't know, the Western Piedmont Education Consortium?
The consortium was put together about 15 or 16 years ago. It's a collaboration of currently 10 school districts, Abbeville, Lawrence, Clinton, Newberry, Saluda, Edgefield, McCormick, Greenwood, 96, and Ware Shoals. You can tell I've
said
that
list before, yes.
I've been over that before. We're all small school districts, relatively small. We put this collaboration together thinking that there were some things we could do together to be more efficient and more effective. And so that network has been built over that period of time, and really we believe is doing what it was intended to do better today than it was when we first put it together.
Well, so I guess this was a way to save money but also expand service.
Exactly. We wanted to do things better, and we felt like that by doing things together, like training teachers, training principals, collaborating on projects, writing reports together, we could do a better job and save money at the same time.
I know that I remember back the last time I think you were here, you were talking about expanding lesson plans that made them just coming up with a plan that is workable and making those almost like, I guess, a standard for the teachers to work with and expanding that through the district and expanding more than what you had. I mean, I think at the time you had two or three and you were working on more different classes on this.
You've got a good memory. We did. We worked on foreign language curriculum, Spanish and French. And we worked on middle school or 6th, 7th, and 8th grade science and developed a very comprehensive lesson plan books and for our teachers. And, of course, with the onset of the Common Core standards, the shift in our state from state standards to Common Core standards, we are really working very diligently to do those same kinds of things again with the standards having changed. We're going to have to go through all that same process again.
Now, what do we think as far as today's youth and the way they learn, what's happening in learning? You know, there's a big discussion. We've got what was one of the headlines in the paper today was South Carolina educators consider literacy fix. But and how are we going to get our young people reading? How are we going to keep them engaged? It doesn't seem that the learning of yesterday is working with our young people here today.
It's not, and that's because they come to us differently than they came to us even when my children were in school. The brain research tells us that their brains are wired differently than because of the media-rich environment that they are exposed to prior to coming to us.
So no wonder we can't understand them then, right? Okay.
Well, I mean, they learn differently than we learned, and so we have to, in turn, teach them differently than you were taught and I was taught and actually then our children were taught. So
what does that mean for the teacher of today?
It means that they have to do things differently. They have to teach from an experiential perspective rather than being the imparter of knowledge, the standing in front of the class and giving the knowledge out.
The common word called lecturer.
Yes.
Yes.
That, you know, that just doesn't work for kids today. They learn by doing. And so you have to plan your lessons to have kids doing things and learning by doing projects and experiencing things on their own within a controlled environment. So those are some of the challenges that we're working with now.
Now, this, of course, is starting at what age group? I mean, when did this change happen? When did these kids change?
Well, I don't know exactly when, but
what age group is this affected? I mean, are our high school students learning different? Are our
I think probably all of the students that we have now are more, as the research calls it, digital natives. Mm-hmm. They know how to do things just because they know how to do things. The brains are wired to know how to do things. If we need a VCR or a
VCR,
not a VCR,
DVD
or whatever
program, they
program
can figure.
Or figure it out. The TVs, I mean, just call a kid. They figure it out. A lot of stuff on the computers. They are able to figure it out because of the way that their brains are wired. So.
Now, just out of curiosity, that has to be challenging for the older teacher, I would think. The teacher that has been teaching for 25 years or something, I would think that would be challenging for them.
I'm sure it is. We were taught to teach differently.
Sure.
Than what we're expecting in the classroom now.
Sure.
And so that's one of the reasons that the collaboration through teacher training and principal training is so important, because we need to provide those folks with the support they need, mm-hmm. to make that transition, to be able to meet the needs of the students.
Yeah. So I would think that would be difficult to address, particularly if I'm used to doing something and I've done it for this many years this way, than to all of a sudden be told, no, you've got to interact with your students. You're not just imparting knowledge. You now have to interact with them in a different way. That would appear to be challenging. But what do you think are the biggest issue that we have to address in education in South Carolina, and more particular maybe to our more local districts?
Well, I think probably the shift to the Common Core is, which is a set of standards for student learning that has been developed by a collaboration between the National Governors Council and the National Council of State Chief State School Administrators, which are in our situation would be the State Superintendent of Education. That group nationally, mm-hmm. has worked to put together standards that of teaching students what they should learn that will prepare our students for the challenges that we believe that they'll face. We want our students to be able to compete with students globally, mm-hmm. Because that's really where the competition for them will come.
Having looked at these, what do you feel about the core principles? Do you think they're on target, on mark for where we should be?
We're very comfortable with them. We've studied them very thoroughly and diligently. We believe that they represent what our students need. We're working very hard to move forward with those. It is, in some instances, a pretty drastic change because students have had expectations at the first grade level, mm-hmm. And now that might be shifted down to what those students need to be doing in kindergarten. And things that students were doing at the seventh grade level now might need to be done at the second grade level. And I've got a second grader living with me now, and I'm seeing some of that firsthand.
Sure.
My wife is a retired math teacher. She's mm-hmm. taught seventh grade math. She's now working with a second grader who's doing word problems that she did with seventh graders some years back. So
So what does that mean by the time you get to high school?
Well,
will we still be doing math, or will they have graduated on to something else? They're doing seventh grade math in second grade. Wow.
Well, I mean, there's still math that's going to be required. And
sure.
We're not going to get away from algebra and geometry and calculus and all those things. But the unfortunate thing for people like me is it's going to be hard to help our kids.
No, here's what it is. Our knowledge runs out.
Right.
We can't keep up.
That's right.
And for parents that, you know, and there's a whole slew of parents out there who were just glad to get through school, mm-hmm. and now to be sitting here looking at how do I help my child when I'm not even feel that I knew enough to be able to do it.
Right.
So that becomes
That's a challenge.
Difficult. Absolutely.
That's a challenge.
Hey, I'm here with Dr. Ray Wilson of the Western Piedmont Education Consortium. We're going to be talking more about what's happening with education. I certainly hope you're going to stay tuned with us. If you've got a question for Dr. Wilson, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. I'm Ann Eller. We'll be right back.
Gold. Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We are with Dr. Ray Wilson from Western Piedmont Education Consortium. He is the executive director there, and lots going on. And education, of course, is a hot topic. Everybody has an opinion on education, and I think it has to be difficult to try to hold the line, but still make progress. And of course, with the economy and the budgets and everything else, it's not been easy for any school to keep things moving in a positive direction. So what else do you, and then of course, you know, gosh, then we've got the gun issue and the what should we do about our students. That has to be very frightening to think about what happened in Newtown. And you know, I happen to think back to Jamie Wilson right over here in Oakland. That was what, back in 87 or 88.
Mm-hmm.
And we had
right
something
here in Greenwood.
Right here in Greenwood. And, and you know, you think, wow. But you know the difference today is? It's the internet, I think. Because we have so much copying of what was happening. That was an isolated event, I think, at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And now it seems we go from one to another, and it's just like and I think it's the internet. I think it's our media. I mean, there's all this out there. But what do we do today with our school systems? How do we handle keeping our children safe?
Well, there's a lot, obviously, that we can do and that we are doing. We are analyzing every facet of our operations at our schools to make them as safe as we possibly can. And, you know, schools are actually built today with safety in mind, and that was not the case in the past. We're fortunate here in Greenwood in that most of the schools are newer and have those safety components in place. There are a lot of schools that are really scrambling to try to figure out how they can take an old building that there was no safety issues back then,
mm-hmm.
And try to bring it to a place where they can at least provide some safety for their kids. I was in a school yesterday in Columbia doing an evaluation visit, this was a sixth grade school, which was at one point kind of an open middle school. And they had installed fences and gates with electronic keypads and everything to secure that campus. And that's just one of the things that schools and districts are doing to try to provide as much safety as possible for their students.
Mm-hmm. What is the position of a Western Piedmont Education Consortium as far as teachers being carrying concealed weapons in schools?
We don't have a position. I'll tell you my position.
Okay, then what's your position, Ray?
Having been a teacher and a principal of in several different schools, there's just no way that I would be comfortable with guns in schools. Schools and guns just don't go together.
What if you had a school resource officer?
Well, we have had extremely good experience with school resource officers. Mm-hmm. These are people who are specifically trained to handle situations in schools. They are trained police officers, and we've had probably for 10 years or so, we've had experience with school resource officers. And they have been very positive experiences. However, there is legislation that has been introduced in the House and in the Senate that would permit teachers and principals and other staff members to carry weapons in schools. And I would not be comfortable in a school as a principal or as a teacher with that scenario. There are just too many things that can go wrong. Mm-hmm. Schools are a place where you have a lot of people, and there's a lot of emotion, there's a lot of passion, and guns can get taken away from people.
Sure. That'd be one of the things that I was thinking about as far as particularly a student type thing ending up with a gun in their hand. I could see that happening.
Yeah. We had a presentation in a statewide superintendent's meeting last week from the SLED chief, mm-hmm, talking about this issue, and he is opposed to that legislation. One of the things that he said is, you know, is if we come in and there's an active shooter event going on, we're going to shoot the person with the gun.
And if that's a teacher,
if that's a teacher or a principal or whatever, they're not going to be able to tell if it's not one of them. If they're not in, if that person's not in uniform,
right?
That's who they're going to shoot.
Sure.
So they're just all, in my estimation, this is not the consortium's opinion. This is mine. And it's drawn from 43 years of experience in working in schools that's not a mix that I'd like to see happen.
So you feel that fencing, metal detectors, this type of thing would be a good avenue, or
well,
what?
Control the environment, and I'm not sure fences would probably be good, but are not necessary. I think the approach that most schools are using is a controlled environment where there is one point of entry, mm-hmm, and that point of entry is highly controlled with cameras, with locks, with personnel that can allow those in who need to get in, mm-hmm, but keep out those who do not need to be in.
Sure.
So that's kind of the approach. One point of entry, and that point of entry being very carefully controlled.
Sure. All right. Well, guess what? It's almost 4:30 here, Ray. We are here with Dr. Ray Wilson. He is the Executive Director of the Western Piedmont Education Consortium. We are going to hear a word from South Carolina News, a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back. Don't you go away. We got a lot more to talk about. How about transportation? How about tax reform and infrastructure? Hey, we've got it all here, right here on WCRS. We'll be back. Don't you go away.
This is Philip Biffle, your Greenwood Edward Jones Financial Advisor. Do you have a recovery plan for your investments? If not, there are several reasons we think you should. While interest rates are very low, certain income strategies and investments could help increase your investment income. Also, many investment portfolios are out of balance at a time when proper investment diversification may be most critical. You also may want to review your portfolio to consider replacing lower quality investments with higher quality investments that may be at attractive prices. No one can control what the market will do next. You can, however, take advantage of investment opportunities that exist today. At the same time, it is important to be well positioned for whatever the market does tomorrow. Please call me, Philip Biffle, or stop by my office today to develop your personalized recovery plan investment strategy. Please call me, Philip Biffle, at 229-0444, or stop by my office today to develop your personalized recovery plan investment strategy. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
All right, we're back here, Sharp Fast's Gallery. We've been having a conversation off the air here that I'm going to bring back around to you on the air right now. I have Dr. Ray Wilson. He is the Executive Director of Western Piedmont Education Consortium. We've been talking a little bit about the new Common Core standards that are being adopted and therefore changing up the way your child's schedule through school. Seems like it's being speeded up, Ray. If you're doing seventh grade math and now you're doing it in second grade and calling it second grade math, oh, Lordy, look out. But it is great. It is great. And, of course, a lot of our kids that are graduating from high school already are taking classes in college, the bridge programs that are out there. They're tremendous amounts of help. But are our kids all ready for this?
I think the earlier that they become exposed to it, the better off we're going to be. I mean, the research tells us again that the first 5 years of life, a child's mind is like a sponge. I mean, it just grabs everything. And we don't need to miss those opportunities to start developing their minds, to start taking advantage of that sponge and giving them the things that they're going to need. I mean, languages can be developed at a very early age. Mm-hmm. And in the past, where have we taught languages? At the high school level.
Sure, absolutely.
Junior and senior level. But the earlier that we can begin things like that, the better.
Now, what about, though, for the underprivileged child, the child that comes from the family that doesn't have the ability to expand the child's mind in that age 1 through 5? That's a tough time, and provides for that child to be behind once they do get into kindergarten.
Well, there again, I think the earlier that we can involve all children in learning experiences, the better off we're going to be as a society. Because, as you say, if that doesn't happen when they come in kindergarten, they're going to be behind. There's actually legislation that has been introduced that would provide a full-day 4-year-old kindergarten. And, of course, we had a tremendously tough time several years ago in getting the state to accept the full-day 5-year-old kindergarten. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people that just don't believe that children should be involved in those types of activities at that early an age. But my belief is that the earlier we can put children in structured situations where they can begin to learn, and the learning is through play to start with. Mm-hmm. We don't need to take away playtime from children, but we can teach them through play.
Sure.
And the earlier that we have programs available for students, for children, the better off they're going to be in their intellectual development.
Now, but what about the parents? I know a lot of parents feel totally inadequate in raising their children, trying to get them what they need, but unable to simply because they don't know. When they went through school, maybe they didn't have all the advantages. Maybe they just weren't that interested in school. I mean, we have a whole generation that was part of what was happening. How do you help that parent become involved in that child's education or bringing up that has to do with making sure that they are getting the things that the child needs?
You know, that is really something that has been a struggle for education and for society, I believe, for a long period of time. Parenting is probably the most difficult job that there is. And none of us have had classes in parenting. Even the best parents haven't had classes.
I mean, we just have always learned it from our parents,
that's right?
Right.
That's, we've had models.
Right.
And
good ones and bad ones.
If we were fortunate and we had good models, then we can take that model and we can adapt it to how we try to be parents.
Sure.
But those that weren't fortunate to have that good model really struggle. I think society and schools have tried to do this, have tried to put programs in place that will help parents be parents and help parents be good teachers for their children. Mm-hmm. Because the reality is the parent is the most important teacher that the child has. The parent has the child the majority of the day.
Sure.
So we need to be about providing opportunities for helping parents be better teachers.
And how would we do that? That's my question. And, you know, with the budget that we have, it seems like those always come down to where do you balance it? Where do you make those choices? But how would we go about doing that?
Well, in an ideal situation.
Okay, in an ideal society,
yeah,
yes.
where you've got the resources, you could put programs in place. The unfortunate situation that we've come up against here since the Great Recession is all the really enrichment extra programs that were in place have been eliminated because
sure.
we're back to the basics. As far as staffing is concerned, and even in some of those situations, we have cut the basic programs in staffing. So it would take some resources, but there are things that we as a society could do to help parents be better parents.
Okay. Well, that is one of the issues, because otherwise we just have a self-fulfilling prophecy moving forward, and we're not moving the mountain. But how about where do you think we're at on funding for schools? I mean, we have tax dollars from our local tax base, then of course we have state funding. How are we doing in the 10 districts that you work with right now? How is the funding for the schools?
We're struggling. We are the expectations as far as our standards are concerned continue to increase every year, which is good. But the resources to meet those expectations have been stymied, especially since 2008, since the recession hit. The funding levels have decreased both from state and local dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, districts have had to lay off a good bit of staff and therefore are trying to do, like everybody else, more with less. I'll give you a perfect example. Wishaw's Elementary has just been nominated as a National Blue Ribbon School.
Wow.
A great honor. And they've worked really hard to get this. A couple of weeks ago, I went over and met with the faculty after school to present them with a little plaque to honor their accomplishment. And you'll recall that in a former life, I was the superintendent over there.
Absolutely.
And you're familiar with that school.
Absolutely, I am, yes.
You've had some involvement with that, have been a great supporter of that school. Well, I'll tell you, I was shocked when I met with the faculty, simply because how small it was. I mean, the size was probably a third or more less than it was when I was there just 10, 12 years ago.
Wow. How about the students? How many students are
same,
there?
Same number of students.
Okay.
But the class sizes are bigger. They're having to do more
with less.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that's the bottom line. We're trying to do more with less. We're trying to teach students who are different with standards that expect more from them at an earlier age with less. But teachers are doing a fantastic job.
Why do teachers do it? Here's my question. Why do the teachers do it? I think if I was dealing with all that, I might just say I've had enough.
Well,
Even loving the kids and all that stuff. Even loving the kids. Our teachers are not paid that well. They take a lot of money out of their own pockets. I know this from experience to help fund the class mm-hmm. and to get supplies and whatever. When they know of a child that is really struggling or this type of thing, I've known many teachers to take money out of their pocket to make sure that they had a little extra lunch or they had mm-hmm. this, that, and the other. So why do they do it?
Teachers are special people.
Yeah.
They really are special people. They have a calling. They want to help. They're caring people, and that's what keeps them in it, I believe.
Has to be, because it's not the money.
Well, and that's one of the great things from my perspective is to get to work with people like this every
sure.
day. Caring, loving, special people. So that's what makes my life special.
Absolutely. Hey, I'm here with Dr. Ray Wilson. He's the Executive Director of Western Piedmont Education Consortium. We're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6276.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, 4:51 in the afternoon, coming up on that 5 o'clock hour. But as we go towards the top of the hour, we want to talk about student transportation and decentralization and maybe even some privatization here. We got some big words we're throwing out, but this school transportation and school buses and everything. Didn't we just get some new school buses in our area here?
We did.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how many, but we got a few. I think the state actually bought maybe 100 or so.
Mm-hmm.
The situation that we have here in our state is our state has the only totally state-run bus transportation, student transportation system in the country. And a lot of folks would like to change that.
They like it to be run by the school district.
The governor and the state superintendent of education have proposed that take place. Currently, the system is run by the State Department of Education. It is a system that has woefully been underfunded for years. We are running buses that are 20 to 30 years old and have 300,000 miles on them.
I know the lottery contributed some buses, too. That is one thing. The South Carolina lottery contributes buses, too, which is a good thing.
And I think that the current, the last round of buses that were purchased was with excess or unclaimed lottery funds. The legislature actually 4 or 5 years ago passed a law that said that they would replace 1/15 of the fleet every year. So on a 15-year cycle, they would
replace all of them.
Replace the cycle, replace the buses fleet. Unfortunately, that's not a law that they've been able to follow. You know, the legislature, I guess, is the only body that's allowed to break their own laws. But
many times,
yeah. But the prior to this current purchase, the department actually took their buses that had been taken offline and had been all the parts that could be used taken off of them and sold them for scrap metal.
So we made money on these buses.
We made money on it.
Oh, come on. Did we really?
We did.
Okay.
We took that money and we went to Kentucky and bought 50 or 60 buses that had been taken offline there, but were new to us. Mm-hmm. I mean, these were 15-year-old buses, 12-year-old buses, still had some good miles on them. The really interesting thing, we were competing in the bidding for those Kentucky buses with scrap metal companies.
So, that's bad, Ray. That's bad. Okay.
You know, we have ways of doing things here
in
our state.
Well, hasn't the big discussion been about whether the state should continue? The state actually considers that a very big burden to be able to be responsible for that. But then there's a lot of concern on the district level, whether the districts can actually keep the buses in the condition that they need to be kept in and provide the fuel, et cetera, for them.
That's correct. One of the concepts that has been introduced, or actually two concepts. One is there's been a move to privatize the buses to allow either the state or districts to
put it out,
contract the service with a bus transportation
company.
Mm-hmm. And we actually have three districts in the state that are already doing that. Charleston and
aren't they the ones
Beaufort
that are up for strikes? Isn't there a strike going on down there, folks?
There is.
Okay, I thought so.
The union is
good
bus
idea.
Drivers union is fortunately that's kind of helped us put that piece on a back burner.
Okay.
Privatization, they claim they can save money, but the three districts that are experiencing this, they're pleased with the service, but they'll tell you it costs more. So as a cost-saving benefit, privatization is not what it's claimed to be. The current initiative is to turn the buses over to school districts and let them do with them however they want to do with them, either bid them out to a private company, run them themselves, or whatever. That scares us to death.
Because? Because
the state hasn't funded them when it's been their responsibility.
Uh-huh.
Well, if they could turn it over to us, you think they're going to fund it even better?
No, they'll fund it less.
They will fund it less.
Exactly.
It would then become a cost to the local taxpayer.
Exactly.
The counties would be responsible for having to raise the money for fuel and bus drivers' salaries
repairs and
all those kinds of things. So,
sure.
We are, every opportunity we get, we're trying to say this is not a good idea.
So is it better that it stays with the state?
It is. I mean, if the state wants to privatize, go for it. But don't turn it over to the local folks and say, here, it's your baby. You take it and run with it. Because we've had them do that with other things in the past and say, you know, we'll pay for it. You just take it over. But the dollars never follow the responsibilities. So
sure.
We're very wary of that proposal.
So they should stay there. I mean, I see it as a big expense. And then how do you make sure that everything from one district to the other district to the next district is being followed the same type of rules and regulations, shall we say?
Well, there are standards.
I forgot we're talking schools. Of course, yeah. There's standards. Silly me.
Or, you know, where you can pick up a student, how far between stops and all those kinds of things. And it is standardized across the state.
Okay.
Now, if you privatize, if you've got the extra money, then you can do better. You can stop every house if you want to.
Sure.
If you've got the money to do that. But keep in mind that the more service you provide, the more it costs.
Sure.
So it would be an equity issue.
Sure.
The Beauforts and the Charlestons and the Dorchester twos, the ones that already have that, they've got more local money. And so they're putting more local money in to get better service for their students. we feel like that we're better taking our chances with the state rather than them turning it over to us and us having to do it on our own.
Well, I think that one of the other biggest problems, and we really are out of time, is the fact that there are districts that are more city-fied, shall we say, and mm-hmm. then there are those districts that are much more country and rural areas. And, of course, right. that would make a difference as to how they're run. Dr. Ray Wilson, it is, as always, a pleasure to have you here with us today.
Thank you, Ann. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for coming on. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.